This seance is recorded on the 24th of October, 1955. I have to point this to Rose Creek, medium lengthy print.
Communicator, Dr. Charles Marshall. There is a slight hum on the original tape, therefore this is not a very good copy.
What are we going to talk about today?
I think we ought to discuss, rather talk about the spheres.
Yes.
Because there's so much to be said in regard to the spheres. There are so many different conditions.
I'd like to know from the very lowest and gradually go up, Doctor.
I see. Well, I don't particularly feel inclined to take you to the lowest spheres. The simple reason I don't think any good can be achieved by it, and since I know full well that you have no contact with them whatsoever when you come here, and it's all very depressing. I don't want to depress you.
I think I would like to go down there when I come over there to see if I can help anybody.
Well, my dear, you have free will to choose for yourself if you so wish to do that kind of work, although there again the special training is necessary.
Oh.
Even those who go to the lower spheres to attend and to help those less fortunate, they just can't do it just because they want to do it. It requires a certain amount of training.
How do you mean training?
Well, over here we have colleges, I suppose you would call them, of science colleges, where people can learn all kinds of things which are essential and necessary to their development. And in regard to entering into the lower spheres, you do need a certain amount of education, the method of approach, for instance. You just can't go like a bull into a china shop into one of the lower spheres. Believe me, it could be dangerous, even for a highly evolved soul, even for one who has progressed to a certain degree. To enter into the very low spheres in itself is quite an undertaking. I don't say exactly fraught with danger, but certainly one that can be, to some extent, well...
Can you get contaminated going there?
Well, to some extent, yes. You see, the point is that the very highly evolved souls do not themselves, or very seldom, enter into the very low spheres. But there are many, many stages of evolution and development, and certain people, not very necessarily highly developed, but necessarily not, but at the same time very fine people, spiritually evolved to a point, do choose to go down to those spheres to work and to help. And it is quite an undertaking. You must realize that we on this side are more subject to conditions than anything that you know of in your world. You are subject to conditions. The point is, over here we're much more subject. And if a person chooses to do what we term rescue work, or going to the lower spheres to help, they are inclined to be affected by, in some way or other, according to the individual concerned, especially by the conditions in which they find themselves. I do not mean by that that the person concerned who acts as a helper or a leader or one who chooses to serve in some capacity in the lower spheres is necessarily made evil or lowers his standard of spirituality by entering into that environment, but does not alter the fact that one can be and is often affected by lower conditions. The same as, for instance, you, in a sense. Supposing you, a woman of some education, and certainly one who is very highly strung, one who feels intensely and very musical and is used to a certain standard of life. If you were placed, shall we say, in a slum area, in a depressing place, you would be very much affected by those conditions. You wouldn't necessarily develop into such a person as you would probably find around and about you, but you would be affected mentally by that atmosphere. Well, the same applies to those souls who choose to go to the lower spheres to serve and to work. They are, affected to some extent by the environment in which they find themselves, and often when they return to their normal habitation, they do need a great deal of attention. In other words, they have to be reinvigorated, as it were, in a spiritual sense.
How is that done, Doctor?
Well, there are certain places here that are, I suppose you call them, kind of clinics or hospitals or places where people can draw away from the environment, their circumstances and so on, or condition, and they are placed in these institutions, or call them what you like, where they receive attention, where they receive a course, if you like, of power, where they are, I don't know how to begin to explain, it's very difficult. You see, the auric emanation which they bring back with them from the lower sphere is such that as soon as they enter into the environment which they are really used to, which is their natural condition, there is a clashing, there is a period when they must gradually be rehabilitated, they must be refreshed, and they must be placed in such a position that they can be invigorated with the conditions of the sphere which they are normally in habitation. And they have to be they have to lose the contamination, as it were, that they brought with them from the other spheres, from the lower spheres.
Well, that auric emanations must be like tentacles.
Well, I can't explain this very well. It's very difficult.
Yes.
If you can imagine a human being, not so much the person, but their auric condition is rather like a sponge, that they absorb whatever is around and about them, and they have to disperse that or reject it and refresh themselves. They have to be renewed with the conditions of their own sphere. And certain people here, you see, you cannot appreciate this, you cannot follow this, I can't explain it very well, but we know much more scientifically, and the word scientifically I use in a very real sense, because our world is scientific in as much that it's a reality. There's much that is yet to be known and discovered. Even in the very sphere in which we may live, there is much that we have yet to find out and discover. You must realize this too, that a sphere, take it as one place, although actually it's a part of many, but the point is that in a sphere, it is a habitation, it is a place which has been lived in by untold millions of souls through many generations of passing from your world to this. It isn't a static thing. By that I mean that the individuals concerned don't stay there, they're not static there, but the actual place itself is static inasmuch that people stay there for a period of what you would term time, until they have progressed beyond that stage. Then they pass through a phase what you call death, although it isn't anything like the physical death as you know it.
No, you've explained it.
And new people take over. But remember that the place in which a person may find himself or herself is what previous generations have made possible. And you never can react or respond to anything beyond that phase of existence. You can naturally go down to lower spheres or lower conditions and experience much there. But if you do that, though you may do it in the desire to be of assistance, to help, at the same time, it is a mission that you take upon yourself a great deal of responsibility. And you are bound in some shape or form to be affected by other conditions which you are not used to, which are not natural or normal to you. And in consequence, when you come back into your environment, you do need refreshing.
Yes.
You do need purifying, if you like.
Yes.
You need to discard from your auric emanation and auric self all those conditions and thoughts which you have picked up same as when you go through your physical or material life.
Yes.
You accumulate and assimilate all sorts of experiences, a lot of them which are no good whatsoever to you from a spiritual standpoint.
Yes.
And gradually as you grow older and you look back and you're wiser, you realize how much that has happened was unimportant, unessential.
Yes.
And yet you had to experience it to some extent, maybe, because it was essential for you to know these things.
Yes.
Otherwise you couldn't grow.
Yes.
You see, we have schools here where people are taught a great deal about human nature and how best to approach, and for instance, an individual in a certain degree or a lack of degree of development, and in consequence you have a working knowledge, if you like, and put it like that, of a person and how to work with that person, to help that person, how best probably it is or would be to help that person out of their present environment. But even in spite of all that, it doesn't alter the fact that you may come up against a person or persons that you're trying to help in a low sphere who are extremely difficult. Perhaps a person who, shall we say, has very strong, firm, fixed views, ideas, not necessarily evil, but for instance, some of the greatest difficulties we have are with people who have very strong, fixed, firm religious convictions.
Yes.
I think we've told you before,
yes,
that those who are, as it were, held down tremendously by dogma and creed, although they're not unhappy particularly in their environment, and I wouldn't suggest for a moment they're in an evil environment or even a bad environment, at the same time they are much more difficult to approach, much more difficult to work with, much more difficult to help than perhaps somebody who was, as the world understands it, a pretty bad character. Yet at the same time they had a flexible mind. They weren't sort of, shall we say, held down, tightly bound by hide-bound creeds and dogmas.
Yes.
I always feel the most difficult people to help are those who have, for many, many years, their earthly life been bound by creed and dogma.
Yes. You know, some years ago, I believe my father, when I used to be asleep, he used to take me down to the earth fears, because one or two people, and one especially that I got very fond of, who lived in the reign of Charles II. And I believe he used to come and talk to me and tell me what help I was to him, and I think he's progressed tremendously now. Have you seen him?
I don't know this person in question, but I can quite believe it. I mean, I do know that people on earth are often used,
yes,
to help people less fortunate on lower spheres. For instance, you see, one thing, invariably, the earth world is much nearer, much more in harmony, if I can put it like that,
yes,
with the lower spheres, because after all, the earth world is very materialistic, and the majority of people in it are only concerned with materialism. That doesn't mean to say that they're necessarily evil, although there are many, and there's many evil conditions prevalent in the world, but it is quite possible that if you, and I know you have over a long period of time, been so interested in this great truth, this subject, that you have been helped from this side, and that you have been taken to various spheres, of that I'm quite sure you've experienced a great deal. And I do know, because of what you have learnt and what knowledge you have assimilated, that there will be no likelihood that you will enter into any of the lower spheres, only, as I say, of your own free will.
Yes.
It's quite feasible, and I can quite realize that you've done a certain amount of what we term rescue work while yet in the body, and in consequence it will have helped you to, when you come here, to progress, and you probably won't have the need or desire to enter into any lower sphere environment again to do such service or such work. The point is that a lot of people do feel the need, the desire, do this kind of work, but I don't think somehow that you will feel that desire within yourself to do any more of it.
Mm.
I think, quite frankly, if I know you, not that I'm suggesting that you're selfish by nature, but I do know that you'll be so unhappy when you come here among your musical friends, and your music and your relations, your mother and father and brother and so on, that I don't think for one second that you have any desire whatsoever to go down into the lower spheres, and there's a sheer curiosity to see what kind of music they have there. And I'm quite sure that if you do, you won't like it, because it's bound to be totally unlike anything that you admire or like.
Yes, but it would be interesting, you know, Doctor. to realize the different grades.
Well, my dear, I can assure you that there wouldn't be much gained by it, because if you want a good idea of what music sounds like in the lower spheres, go to the Albert Hall to a modern concert. You won't be far out. If you want discords and disharmony, if you want noise and blast, well, go to hear some concert by a modern composer.
Yes, no, I don't want to, thank you very much.
If you want to go through the Wagnerian hells, well, it's entirely up to you.
Well, he was a wonderful, he was very descriptive about hills and
yes,
so on.
I think he must have had a very personal touch with them.
Yes, I think so. That's why
I
like him.
I think he's rather typical of his nation. Well, that probably sounds very unkind, because there are many kind German people, but the warlike spirit of the
yes.
German race seems very much in evidence in his music, but it doesn't alter the fact, of course, that he also wrote very lovely melodies,
yes.
And I do know that he is a very advanced soul here, and his music has great depth and great power, and I shouldn't pass some kind references to his work, although sometimes I feel that's a little bit in tune with you when I listen to your conversation, and but I never could stand Wagner at any price.
No, I can't stand him.
You know, you do ask me some questions, I do so want to answer them, but I do find this dearth of words. Oh dear, oh dear, how can one explain some of these things to you?
Yes, I know, but you needn't explain them absolutely explicitly, because I can sort of read between the lines. Try to, anyway, although I can't picturize anything on the other side, really.
But I suppose it never struck you.
Yeah.
I know your interest in music brings this before, but it's never struck you that we have musicians who have developed or brought into being, as it were, on this side, who when on earth hadn't the slightest indication of music in themselves, never had any opportunity or ability even perhaps,
mm-hmm.
but over here have developed those wonderful gifts of music and are great musicians in their own right.
Are they?
Yes.
How does that happen if you don't have the latent gift? Perhaps they...
Well, I think that happens. What I mean is that from your point of view, since you I refer not only to you, but to the average person, they can only conceive, as it were, of something being inherited or being born with one or developing with one in the material life. But of course that is really just a rather foolish assumption, because after all said and done, a person doesn't necessarily have to be gifted in certain ways on your side, not to be gifted on this.
Mm.
There's such a thing as a law of recompense.
Mm.
I mean, for instance, there are many people in your world who have to turn their hand and become chimney sweeps or something quite depressing, have no musical education, no musical background, and as far as one can judge, have no appreciation. But that is lack, not within themselves in a sense, but lack of opportunity, lack of environment, right environment, and so on. The point is that because a person isn't born with a musical appreciation or a musical development on earth, doesn't mean to say that they won't necessarily develop it in some shape or form over here.
Mm.
And I have listened to music written by or composed by musicians here who were on earth had not the slightest interest or knowledge of music at all, which gives you great hope, considering that you already know something about it.
My goodness, it does. That's my chief aim when
you
I
see,
get there.
Then again, people are under that wrong impression that their first existence, their first awareness of or consciousness of life is on earth, which of course is not so.
Mm.
How do you know if you didn't exist before you were born into the earth world? I would go as far as to say that life has always been there in some shape or form. It hasn't necessarily always registered in material.
Well, then there's no beginning, then there's no end.
Well,
is there?
It's perpetual motion.
Yes.
Perpetual life. I don't think that, you see, you can only judge a beginning when you can see its start. But it doesn't mean to say that it didn't exist before you're conscious of its beginning. The point is that you are conscious of Rose Street because your mother tells you that you were born on a certain day, at a certain hour, a certain time, at a certain place.
I say, Doctor, yes. What puzzles me is this. Now, in this incarnation, I have a mother. But in my last incarnation, I must have had another mother. What's happened to all those mothers?
Oh, be generous. You must have also had a father.
Yes!
That's twice in two generations you say you've had a mother. Who cares this about your father? How do you think you're a miraculous conception or something?
No! But that's what's been puzzling me. Mothers and fathers and parents, for instance.
Parents are of no consequence, in a sense. I don't mean that unkindly.
No, I know what
you mean. I mean the mere accident of birth is surely an accident.
Yes.
After all, said and done, millions of people go to bed and children are born. Sometimes they're not wanted, sometimes, if it were possible, they wouldn't be there at all. The point is that often the effect of being born is not desired.
Yes, but if it is an accident, why do the children bear a great resemblance to their parents?
Well, I don't think there's anything difficult to understand about that. I don't think it even matters.
I suppose it doesn't.
After all, it isn't so much what you look like. You can look at it as ugly as sin. But it's what you are inside you that matters. What your
this
spirit is like.
This inside business, I can't comprehend at all.
Well, you should
this,
do.
I feel different things inside.
My dear girl, there's many a person walking about today in your world who outwardly has no merit at all, who outwardly appears as dull as ditchwater and as uninteresting as whatever you like to say. But inside, there's a wonderful soul. There's a wonderful temperament, there's a wonderful development of character that's been formed over perhaps generations of time, for all you know. The outward show is of no consequence.
But what do you look like when you come out of your shell?
Well, my dear, very beautiful.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, what do you mean by that? Are you the same shape?
In other words, now you want to know that if you've lived several generations, in other words, if you've had several incarnations over a period, say, of 1,000 years.
Yes.
Which one do you look like?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
The point is that you probably don't look like any.
Oh, goodness.
Well, don't worry, you'll be recognized.
Well, tell me some more.
My dear girl, I wish it were possible to find words to explain these things. Don't you realize that we have, at least those of us who've developed to a certain degree, have something more important to convey than just the outward expression or form. We have the awareness and the ability to see and perceive the soul. And the soul in itself is not just a shape or a face or a figure. That can be assumed, and that often is, especially for recognition purposes when essential. But as you develop spiritually, and become more and more conscious of the powers and the greatness of spirit, you are only concerned with the development of a spirit. You are only conscious, as it were, and only desire to be aware and conscious of the reality, which is the inner soul of the individual. The outer shell or covering is merely the mask.
Yeah, I know, but what does the inner soul look like? You know, the snapshot of the of Chopin, the piano, and himself.
My dear girl, if that photograph pictureized a perfect physical reproduction, as you understand it, of Chopin, you would have been in a seventh delightful heaven. But the point is that because you've got what you think or appears to be an unformed figure,
there's
a slight disappointment in a sense. But what I want you to know is that the blazing power of a soul, which only comes to you in that shape as you saw it, unformed, yet in itself, in all its true beauty and all its greatness, is more important and more wonderful than a physical exterior. You saw, to some extent, only dimly,
yes,
some part of the inner man.
Yes.
You see, after all said and done, when you listen to a great piece of music,
yes,
you are not conscious of the face or the form. The artist who is executing that music, although you may look at him and see him on the piano, yet within yourself, within your mind, your real inner consciousness is far removed from the artist who is playing the music. It is what the music means to your soul, the way it lifts you out, as it were, from yourself, the way you feel as if you are transported into heaven of heavens. That is something which is more vital, more important. You are sensing, you are, as it were, touching the very soul of the instrumentalist or the musician. You are receiving a divine, in a sense, contact with him. I wish it were possible to explain this. You see, you can only appreciate to some extent, I suppose it's natural, while in a material world, you must have form, you must have shape.
Yes,
I don't say that doesn't exist here, it does.
But supposing when I pass over, for instance, now, what will I look at?
Why are you so concerned as to what you will look like? You look like Rose Crete of 140 Westbourne Terrace, London West 2, England the World. But only for a time.
Oh.
And only when necessary. You see, my dear girl.
Then spirits have the power to assume different
shapes. Of course.
How is that done?
By mind.
By mind?
By the power of thought. By the deep inner feelings and emotions. Desires and intensity of purpose that comes from deep within.
Would you last, sir, just for a little while?
If you so wished.
Yes.
And I don't suppose you do for one moment, but I'm assuming that you so wished, that when you came here,
yes,
you were so sick to death of the Rose Crete of 140, etc.,
yes,
London, England. You wanted to look different,
yes,
because you're so browned off, as you say, with that old body of yours.
Quite right, yes.
Well, you wanted to look beautiful and glamorous.
Yes.
There's nothing to stop you. But then again, there's nothing to be achieved by it, as
of
far
course
as I
not.
See.
No.
After all, what is important is, my dear, you yourself. We don't see you as you see yourself in the mirror. Very seldom, unless, of course, we have a special reason for wanting to see you as you are, in that sense, physically. We see the real Rose Crete, the soul, the deep, abiding, sincere person that you are, with all the love and the beauty that is within yourself. You
mm-hmm.
see, over here, we do not concern ourselves with physical shells or bodies. They are materially meant for the time and for a purpose. You will have the exterior of Rose Crete when you first come here, of course, for recognition. But then again, you won't be the Rose Crete of 65, or whatever your age is. You'll be the Rose Crete of 22, or something like that.
Straight away?
Of course you will.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily in some cases, would that be so? Because if the person passed with a very strong, fixed idea of themselves, as they were when they were passing, or when they passed, and they were conscious of all their aches and pains, if they had them, and so on, they would hold on for a short space of time to that thought form of themselves.
Mm.
But you, to the knowledge that you gained, the experience that you have, it's most unlikely that you'll bring that old body over here at all. You won't think of yourself in that sense or that way. I hope not.
I hope not. Can one see oneself then?
Of course you can.
You can?
If you want to. You don't have to have a mirror either.
You don't? Then how do you see yourself?
Reflection in the astral atmosphere. It's as simple as that. The same as we can see all that has passed in our own lives or the lives of those around and about us. So we can turn the clock back centuries and centuries upon centuries of time and see what has gone before. So we can see in the atmosphere not only ourselves but all. Nothing is hidden.
Does that happen when we come out of our bodies, for instance? Our whole lives are put in front of us?
Yes. But you know, I don't know if you've ever heard, it has been said,
yes,
that a person in the moment of driving can
oh, yes,
pass through their lives. You see, what you must remember, my child, is that your particular life, or my particular life, or any soul's particular life, is recorded around and about them in their own environment. And when I use the term environment, I don't necessarily mean the habitation in which they live, but in their own emanation, in their own selves. You know, the Bible has things written in a very strange way, probably written in a simple way for simple minds of the time, but you know, it has been said that everything is recorded, and the book of life should be opened and so on, and you should be judged.
Yes.
But the point is that no one judges you. You judge yourself.
Yes.
And you are, for the first time, completely open, as it were, to all and sundry.
Yes.
That's why you cannot vibrate, you cannot inherit or enter a condition to which you are not suited.
Okay.
You must automatically enter into the condition where you are part, and will be part, of the condition itself.
I expect one goes through a certain time of sleep, don't you?
It depends. You see, we mustn't put them all these things together. I mean, some would find it essential and necessary to rest or relax or to sleep for a space of time and gradually become, as it were, brought into their new environment gradually. But others, it isn't necessary.
Mm.
I don't think there's going to be much sleep with you. I think you're going to be so cute, so wide awake, so running here, there and everywhere. Tell me this. Besides, you've got such friends, your brother who's always around and invites you, was the very first to be at your side and to guide and to help you.
Yes.
And I shan't be too far away, and I know my friend Chopin will have a hand in it somewhere. No. I know it's natural you want to know all you possibly can, and it gives me particular and all of us great happiness to
answer the question.
But the point is, my dear, the questions, some of them, cannot be answered in the material sense because they are so far removed from material things that there are no material ways, as far as I can see, that they can be answered.
Yeah.
I can only give you a sketchy outline.
Perhaps later on, when we get different things, the explanations may come quite easy, without speech.
I hope so, but we can only wait and see.
That'd be marvelous.
The point is that science, for instance, in your world, has developed to such a degree that to some extent it does help to prove what we are trying to say to you or give to you. The fact that you can sit in a room and see for yourself with your own eyes things that are happening 100 or more miles or so away, witnessing at the same moment, to some extent does help to prove, if proof is necessary, what we're trying to convey. Everything is registered in the atmosphere. What is happening at this very second is all being recorded. It's as if the whole of the etheric world, or all the ether around and about you, all around the world, is a recording instrument. And you are registering your thoughts and your emotions and your conditions throughout life.
And such a world as space should not exist in the ether at all. There is no space.
No. Not in a sense. There is space in as much that you can go through space. For instance, you go into an aeroplane, you can travel through space. But it's not the nebulous nothing that people think.
Uh-huh.
It isn't just air and clouds and so on. It's much more than that. You see, the point is that if you're on a very low vibration, you can pierce. I say, if you are on a very low vibration, it can be pierced by a very high one without the low vibration being conscious of it at all.
If I were in a low vibration, I can pierce to a higher one, did you say?
Yes, it can work in a converse way. It can work in the opposite direction too. But, how can I explain this? For instance, I can walk through a door.
Yes.
You have to open it.
Yes. Yes, I understand.
It's only a matter of vibration.
Yes, yes. Oh, all this is very interesting.
This workmen are very quiet, aren't they?
Yes, they are. How's that?
Oh.
Somebody must be at them.
Yes, I've been half asleep.
Oh, my God.
No, I wish I could illustrate certain things. I remember that on many occasions when patients have had a negro arm removed, often they said that they could feel the fingers or the toes, and yet they weren't there at all. It was merely the etheric body that they were sensing or feeling. The etheric body is what feels. You see, the actual body itself has no feeling. It is the etheric, the actual physical body has no feeling. It is the etheric body that is conscious.
Yes, because once the etheric body departs, well, there's no feeling at all of that.
Then death takes place.
Yes.
Actually, people put too much store upon the physical body. Yes. I realize that, of course, it must be cared for, and it's a duty, and very essential that one should care for the physical body. But really, if people took as much interest in the etheric body and developed that to the extent and cared for it that they do the physical body, well, I'm sure that people would have a greater knowledge and a greater awareness, and they'd certainly develop on a much more highly spiritual line.
Yes.
You know this truth, and it is a very, very wonderful and a very great truth, and so vital to the human race. If only it were taught, if only it were part of one's curriculum, as it were, from childhood, so much could be done.
Ah, yes, but it's really all these different religions that would have stopped all that.
Well, religions have, of course, for centuries been used in a material sense. I mean, I don't say there isn't a basis of truth, there is. And there's no doubt there's a great deal of good in most religions. But the point is that for centuries they've been used by individuals to support their own ideas, to support their own personality, or support their own pockets.
Yes.
The point is that
religion
is a sop to the human race. The point is that man must realize that he is a spiritual being in process of development, that he has the spiritual powers within himself. He doesn't need to go to anyone else to find out about them or develop them. At least he shouldn't have to. He should be conscious of them. He should know about them. There's no man, no priest, no clergyman has the power to absolve you, for instance, of any sins or anything that you've done wrong.
Yeah.
It's something that you yourself must pay for in some shape or form, which legally you will, by the very law of nature itself. Whatever one does in life, and that doesn't only apply to your life, but all lives, all stages of existence, whatever one does, it is a gradual process of evolution. And if you make mistakes, then you learn by those mistakes.
Yes.
And to some extent, you suffer from them. But the point is, eventually, you develop and grow beyond all recognition, never go back again to recognition, beyond all recognition from the material aspect. The point is that that is life, that all life is progressive, for the simple reason that fundamentally it is movement, it is motion. If it were not for friction, for instance, you wouldn't be in the world at all. Life developed from friction.
Yes.
The whole of nature is movement, is friction.
Yes.
But I could... Well, so much that I must talk to you about. In good time, I will.
Yes.
All I want you to think about is to realize that you are being cared for.
Yes.
As best, well, as best we can, we do what is in our power for you. But to some extent, obviously, you must do something for yourself.
Yes.
It's your life which you are forming and have formed to some extent. But don't be disheartened and don't be put off because, to some extent, you may feel that you're a failure. We have all felt that we're failures, and believe me, there are many people who come here who feel that they're failures and they haven't done very much, they haven't achieved anything. I know you particularly feel that you've achieved nothing in a miserable sense, but then again, don't judge yourself too harshly.
No.
You don't know what you may have achieved in a spiritual sense.
Yes. him.
You don't know what you may have done, and I certainly know a little more than you do, that when you come here, you'll be pleasantly surprised, because a great deal has taken place of which you know nothing, which eventually you will know something. But be of good faith and good heart. There's so much, my child, that we've got to talk about, you and I, and we shall have plenty of opportunities.
Oh, I hope so.
I must go. Tell me the power is waning.
All
and,
right.
And we've kept those blessed workmen quiet for an hour.
Yes, that's lovely.
God bless you, my dear. We'll see you again on Wednesday night.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dr.
Goodbye.
Dear.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye.
Oh, no.
A long talk. This business has not been recognised as a bit puzzling, has it? I mean, when there's not been, let's say that we do recognise each other and all this, but we lose our physical shape.
Yes, everyone loses physical shape to become assumed that shape. Extraordinary, I don't know. But I'd like to know what we really look like without any assumption.
Well, I suppose, for time is nothing to remember, I suppose when we go over, we obviously retain our outward physical appearance, probably perhaps for a long time, if time is in existence.
When you're young, about 20, 22.
But I think there's an intuitive thing about, I mean, for instance, you take a person who's completely blind and can't recognise anybody. Well, they have a terrific sense, haven't they?
Oh, yes, they're much stronger.
But perhaps it's something like that. Not that the people are blind on the other side, I don't mean that.
No.
I don't know, it's awfully interesting.